Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
The thinking atheist. It's not a person.
It's a symbol.
An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith.
Pursuing knowledge.
Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
In the Halloween spirit, talking about the things that scare us. We've done a version of this, I think, a few years ago. I just thought it'd be fun to do it again. Your fears, your phobias. Also, if you have a recommendation for perhaps a less mainstream horror movie, some undiscovered gem that the rest of us can check out to get into the spirit of the season. As you talk about your fears and phobias, come on. I mean, I want to do better than spiders, right? Snakes, and I'm scared of the dark. All right. I mean, I'm not saying your phobia is not real. I'm just saying it's not very interesting. You know, spiders, I'm scared of spiders. Come on. I want something we can sink our teeth into, something that's got a story attached to it. Fears and phobias. And then if you have a recommendation for a horror movie, okay? Great example is this little movie that I saw advertised on Netflix. It's called The Platform, Spanish language film. It's actually overdubbed, but it's not a deal breaker. I mean, the overdubbing is actually pretty well done, but it's a commentary about humanity and class systems. There's a lot of subtext underneath this story about kind of a prison where rooms are stacked upon each other, and there's this hole in the middle of all the rooms where this platform goes up and down. It's a commentary about those at the top and the waste and the abuse and sort of the lack of concern or empathy for those down below. You know, it examines sort of the luck of the draw and circumstance. Those at the top, those in the middle, those at the bottom, our shared humanity. And it's a thick little movie. It's pretty grisly, but it's also a smart film. I guess maybe the argument there is, how much money does the founder of Amazon.com really need? Like, does he need $1 trillion? You know what I'm saying? How did he make the trillion? On the backs of whom? What rules does he get to skirt because he's so powerful? And I use Amazon. I mean, I don't got nothing against the guy personally, and I'm glad for his success. But at some point, when does your social conscience kick in, knowing that there's so much suffering in the world? The platform, and it's gnarly. I'll get to the switchboard in just a second. When I was a teenager, I was kind of a night owl. Like right now, I'm a morning guy. Love to get up before the sun comes up, get around, get into my own thoughts. Back in the day, I was a night owl. I worked late at night. I was up late at night, long after everybody else at the house had gone to bed. So mom and dad and my siblings, they were all crashed. And I'd be up watching, you know, whatever, television, hanging out. And I would lock up whenever it was time to go to bed. I would go check the doors. This is just a thing that I did. I would go and make sure the doors, front door, back door was locked and the doors were shut tight. And I used to have this dream. I had it, a recurring dream, actually. And I would go to the front door and I would turn the locks to make sure the front door was locked. And then I would tug on the doorknob to make sure that the door was secured. And it was. And then I would go to the back door and I would turn the lock. And then I would tug on the door and the door would actually pop open. Like the latch had not totally gone in. The door was only partially closed and it would whoosh open. And there was a dark figure standing right in the doorway, right on the steps. And I couldn't see his face. He was just a shadow. And he had like a hat, black hat on. And he was sort of staring right at me. And then I would wake up, scared the crap out of me. I had the dream several times. Same deal. Front door. Lock it, tug on the door, close, back door, lock it, pull the door, it whooshes open, and there is a dark, shadowy figure. Freak me out. And so, even now, in my 50s, when I lock the house, and I tug on the door just to make sure it's securely closed, I just flash back to that time when I was, I don't know, 16. I have this weird thing about it. I have a phobia about tsunamis. Ever since the Indian Ocean tsunami, I mean, I think I was struck by how pretty much impossible it is to run from a tsunami. I live in Oklahoma. I should have a phobia about tornadoes, and I don't. Like when the sirens go off, I'm out there with my phone camera. I mean, I've got the shelter open and I'm ready, but I'm also scanning the clouds, shooting video, and, you know, it's exhilarating. I don't like tornadoes because they do so much damage and they harm and they kill and destroy property, etc. But there's also something oddly fascinating about them, compelling. I've lived through two twisters myself. Perhaps that's where the fascination comes from. Why the hell is a guy in Oklahoma, USA, freaked out about tsunamis? And I think it's because of the Indian Ocean tsunami that killed almost 300,000 people. I mean, there's nowhere to go. Like, you can't necessarily predict that all of a sudden the ocean floor is going to rise up 30 feet and it's going to create this massive swell and a wave that reaches up to 100 feet high that barrels into shore and goes inland, what, 3, 4, 5 miles, washing away everyone and everything in its path. So whenever I go on a vacation and I'm in Florida, right? We love to go down. We'll go down to Anna Maria Island. Spend a few days near the water. You know, it's nice to be near water that is not brown because all the water in Oklahoma is just dirty brown. We want to go where the water is blue and green and lovely and all of those things. But as I'm going to sleep, I'm like, holy shit, what if there's an earthquake in the middle of the night and a 100-foot wave washes me into oblivion? It's totally irrational. Totally irrational. But I have that phobia. I have a thing about the pricking of the thumb. Like, no problem with needles. You want to draw blood. I'm going to give it the Red Cross. You got to do something at the annual checkup. Whatever. You know, I'm sick and I need a shot. Go ahead. Knock yourself out. When Natalie was in school, she's in the medical field. She had to train to do IVs and stuff. I let her practice on me. Here you go, honey. Now, it doesn't bother me at all. But when they prick the finger, not even just the finger, the thumb. That scene in the John Carpenter classic film, The Thing, where they are taking the razor blade and cutting unnecessarily large cuts in people's thumbs to check their blood, I almost had a massive heart attack. And the rest of the film is as gory as hell. all the other stuff, I wow, that's interesting. Wow, that's neat. Wow, that's a little scary. But to pull out the razor on the thumbs. We've all got them. Fears and phobias. What's yours? 606. Hi, who's this?
This is Savannah from Kentucky.
Hi, Savannah. What do I hear in the background? You got some tunes going on? Or
The Office.
Oh, all right. Well, you work in an elevator or something? I mean, that's interesting. Go ahead. Go ahead. No, fears and phobias.
No, The Office. My fear, I have two really weird ones. My first one that nobody understands, I'm afraid of butterflies and moths.
Butterflies are the happiest thing in the universe. What's going on there?
It's not the way. Okay. They're pretty to look at, but if one flies at my face, I'm going to scream at it.
Well, if anything flies at my face, I'm a little freaky. Wait, what is it about the butterfly itself?
I think it's just their face is just so off-putting. I think it's due to something that happened when I was a kid. My dad caught one in a jar and made me hold it when I didn't want to hold it. So I think it kind of freaked me out for life.
You can't force butterflies on people. They have to discover butterflies organically. And then they feel the color and beauty and the flights and the fancy.
I was also told by my aunt when I actually confessed it to her, she told me that when I was a very small child, just learning to crawl, that she caught me eating a moth.
Eating a moth. All right. Well, yes. For your Halloween, I wish you no moths or butterflies, but peace and a phobia-free holiday. Okay?
Thank you.
See you later. Thanks. I thought butterflies made everybody happy. I guess I was wrong. Talking a little bit about the films that get us in the spooky spirit of the season. And not necessarily the mainstream, but the, you know, some more niche and lesser known horror films. A couple of recent films. Somebody in the chat mentioned Hereditary. I think that's a fantastic little movie and extremely disturbing. I felt the same about Midsommar, which is a polarizing film. People either loved it or hated it. I thought it was extremely well done. I saw a film on Shudder. It's not even an hour long. It's called Host. And it revolves around a six-person Zoom call. Now, for a guy who's seen about 100,000 horror movies, you know, I'm pretty jaded. You know, the jump scare is a cheap scare. I want to be genuinely scared. I want to be sitting on the edge of my seat. I want white knuckles, baby. Host really did that for me. It's interesting, it's hugely timely, it's damn scary. And they pulled it off, not even an hour long, on Shudder, if you happen to have Shudder, a subscription to that network, Host is really good. 413, hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Colin. I'm calling from Massachusetts.
Talking fears, phobias, maybe horror movies. We're getting in the Halloween spirit. What do you think?
Well, a massive horror movie fan, and I've had a phobia since I was a little kid. It's called emetophobia, fear of vomiting.
I get that one.
And
I get that one. Like, that is one of the worst feelings in the world.
It is. I mean, it gets to the point where I can actually remember every single point in my life where it's happened to me, all the way up till being in a crib, which is creepy. I've gotten a lot better, though.
I think it's the sound you make when you vomit. That's probably part of the problem. Sure. Like, it's one of the worst sounds in the universe.
100% agreed. And yet, here we are, fans of horror movies, and there's lots of vomiting in horror movies. But I know you're looking for obscure horror stuff. I, too, am on the constant search for something that actually scares me now. If you're looking along the lines of, say, gory, there's an Italian film called Torso that I recommend.
I am so afraid to Google this. All right, keep talking while I Google Torso.
It has everything a horror movie should have.
1973. All right, well, I'm going to look this up and and see what we can see. But thanks for the recommendation, my friend. And I hope there is no vomiting
Absolutely,
in your
man.
Near future. Okay.
Me too.
Torso, 1973, an Italian slasher film directed by Sergio Martino. The murder of several university students leads to a manhunt for a masked killer with a psychosexual disorder who uses red and black foulards? F-O-U-L-A-R-D-S. What's a foulard? Gotta Google that. Hang on. Just bear with me, all right? This Halloween. F-O-U-L-A-R-D. What is that?
Foulard.
Foulard. A thin, soft material of silk or silk and cotton, typically having a printed pattern. Okay. So he uses red and black fabric to strangle his female victims before mutilating their bodies. Torso. It just sounds like torture porn from this moment. I'm not a big gore guy. Like, you have to earn your scares. And if gore punctuates a genuine scare, okay. Or if you're, you know, if you're winking at the audience, like the Evil Dead films, that's, you know, that is a great example of someone using gore in a way where they're sort of winking at the audience. They're pushing the envelope. They are turning the screw. But gore for the sake of being lazy, because you can't genuinely scare or spook someone, that's a whole other thing. And I'm not at all compelled by that type of gore. Torso, you know what? I think I'm going to skip it. I think I'm good. It sounds a little human centipede to me. And I was never interested in the human centipede. Isn't that the movie where they sew people together from mouth to anus? I'm not doing that. Who would subject themselves to hours of that? I'm not doing it. Still stuck on the vomiting thing. Have you noticed how many different sayings there are for throwing up? I'm not trying to gross you out. I just find this an interesting commentary about the use of expression and language. I just sort of Google searched it. All right. There is a vomit thesaurus included in this list. Acid chowder. The Barfalo Bill. The Bile Geyser. Blowing groceries. The call of the walrus. To chuck a veggie. Disembarking dinner. To flash the hash. Gut soup. To heave, honk, hork, hurl, or whark. Launching lunch. The liquid laugh. Mouth crying. The salad shooter. Pavement pizza. The Ralph. Rocket launching. Rooping. Shouting at your shoes. The spray puree. Throwing it into reverse. Throw the brown cow. To uneat. To upchuck. To vommy. To yak, yark, yawn, a big, bright, chunky rainbow. Yell at the ants. And yodeling. They have a website called the Vomitorium. The Vomitorium. That is horrific to somebody who has a fear of throwing up. I'm sorry for being gross, but I just thought it was interesting. Right now in your own mind, you're thinking of your own saying for when you throw up. In our house, it's hoik. If you hoik. I totally hoiked when I was sick. I had food poisoning and I hoiked. That's the word that we like to use. 570. Hi, who's this?
Hi, Seth. This is Andrea. Now my stomach's just churning from all those.
That's what I do.
All those phrases that you had there.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to waste your time, but I am here to talk about spiders. I'll be quick.
Okay.
It's actually a happy ending, though. When I was very little, I was in several different apartments growing up, and it was just me and my dad, and we always had spiders, and I was terrified of them. But there was one incident in particular that got me like completely terrified of them for good, and it was a baby spider situation. Have you ever seen an egg sac like open?
Yes.
Of baby spiders?
Yeah, and they all sort of emerge.
Pretty horrifying.
Like, oh yeah.
Well, it was like one of those first really warm nights. So I turned my ceiling fan on and I was probably about 7. And I noticed like a little tiny baby spider on my bed then. And I'm like, oh, that's weird, you know, and I kind of smushed it with the comforter thinking like, okay, well, I can take care of that tiny one. And I saw another one and I'm like, okay, I'll grab a tissue. I pulled the tissue out and it was like a geyser, like of baby spiders. They were falling from the ceiling. You know, it was just like the room was spinning with spiders, basically. Pretty much since then, I was just like paralyzed by spiders. You know, it was like even into my adult life, I would see one in my house and I would just stand there and like, I would just start crying. Like it was uncontrollable. And my husband would always tell me, well, you need to desensitize yourself, you know, and he like looked up all this stuff about phobias and that if you look at them, like if you look at pictures of them, and then you like go to the next step of being able to touch the picture, you know, and then you can watch videos of them. And like, it's like this whole process. And I was like, yeah, that's crap. You know, like, oh, like there's no way I'm doing that. But I will say that funnily enough, I think you shouldn't have pushed so hard because we're at the point now where I am like trying to convince him that we should get like a pet tarantula. I have actually completely gotten over this phobia just by desensitizing myself to it. And it's actually really cool. It's just interesting to me because I was just so completely, you know, I would just as an adult crying over just a little tiny thing, you know, it's crazy. But I don't know, I was able to, I'm not afraid of them anymore. So it's pretty amazing.
When I was growing up, if there was a spider, we'd always just immediately kill it. It was a reflex. Now, I'm the guy who scoops it onto the piece of paper and escorts it outside. If there's a spider web in a bush or a tree out front, sometimes I'll go photograph it. I'm like, you know, that's really cool because it's killing flies and mosquitoes and other things, and it's just part of the ecosystem, and it's not harming me. And so I myself have sort of gone on a journey where it used to be any arachnid. Now, scorpions, I'm not there, but like, but spiders, I'm kind of with you. Like you see them and you're like, you know, they really are pretty amazing creatures who do amazing things. And the vast majority are not poisonous, venomous rather, or harmful. And, you know, they're just doing what spiders do. I don't know. I think you and I may have that in common. That's pretty cool. I'm glad you overcame your phobia.
Yeah, through education, you know, just learning about them and stuff. It's been really fascinating. So, yeah.
Good stuff.
Anyway, well, so that's all.
Thanks for sharing. Right. We'll see you later.
All right. Thank you.
Anybody remember that old Martin Sheen movie, The Believers? Came out in 1986 or 1987. There's a spider scene in The Believers. Now, it's not a great movie. But this woman has a sore on one of her cheeks, this big boil-looking thing, and she picks at it, and underneath the skin in the boil, there is a nest of spiders. You can go to YouTube right now, type in The Believers spider scene, it'll pop right up. And if you want to subject yourself to 60 seconds of jaw-dropping awfulness. So you got to think about spiders. I would not recommend it. But she had baby spiders embedded in her face. The Believers, Martin Sheen, 1980s. Check it out. Another scary movie. It's not a horror movie. It's more of a thriller. It just released to Amazon. You can stream it on Amazon. You pay $5 for it. It's called Alone. I'm not giving anything away. It is about a woman who is taking a road trip. There's like three characters in the entire film. And it is really good and damn spooky. For a thriller, it's scarier than many of the horror films I've seen because it's so tense. We were holding our breath for an hour and 45 minutes. It's called Alone. I didn't even know the name of the actors in there. Two of the three I'd never seen before. Alone. Damn good movie for Halloween if you like a good thriller. Love this time of year. More fears, phobias, films, and we'll even get into a little bit of the science of fear. Why we get afraid and how we might be able to overcome it. Lots to do in just a second.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You want this show early? You want it commercial-free? Become a patron with my thanks. Patreon.com/Seth Andrews. Getting in the Halloween spirit, talking about fears and phobias and your favorites and more obscure horror films. 615, hi, who's this?
Gina.
What do you have for us?
Well, I'm not real big on real, the gory stuff, you know, that kind of stuff doesn't appeal to me. But there was a movie called Housebound, and it was made in New Zealand.
Hang on. Keep talking while I Google this.
I love a scary movie that has humor in it. And this one just had me screaming and laughing at the same time. And I love foreign films.
Housebound.
So I just wanted to see if you had seen that one already or know about it.
Housebound, released in 2014, a horror comedy film written, edited, and directed by Gerard Johnstone.
The woman who is the star is always in trouble, and the courts decided that she needed to go home to her mom's house instead of going to jail. And, yeah, you can read about it. It is just so much fun to watch, and I plan on watching it again for the Halloween season.
Happy Halloween to you. Thanks for calling. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Seth, for taking my call. I appreciate you so much.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Anybody remember the film Alligator? This is back sort of during the height of the monster flicks. I want to say it was around 1980. I'm doing a lot of Googling today, so let me look up Alligator. This is the film where somebody flushed a baby alligator down the toilet. And it went down into the sewer, and it grew to, like, gigantic proportions and began to terrorize the town or the city. Alligator movie. 1980. Did I call that? Do I know my 80s films or what? Alligator is a 1980 American monster horror film directed by Louis Teague, written by John Sayles. That guy's a legend. Robert Forster's in it, blah, blah, blah. Set in Chicago, the film follows a police officer and a reptile expert to track a giant, murderous sewer alligator flushed down the toilet years earlier that is attacking residents after escaping from the sewers. Alligator. There was a sequel direct-to-video that was released in 1991 called Alligator 2, The Mutation. Oh, that sounds like a party. That sounds like a party film, right? The Alligator. It reminds me, this is not a horror thing, but, you know, the whole flushing down the toilet thing is, it's like after Finding Nemo came out. And remember, they had that line that all drains lead to the ocean. meaning that if the fish could get flushed down the sink or the toilet or whatever, that they would end up free because they would end up in the ocean. And after Finding Nemo came out, apparently parents had a problem because their children were thinking, oh, my little pet goldfish needs to be set free. So they would go flush their fish down the toilet, thinking that all drains lead to the ocean. How many fish died because of that line? It's like fishpocalypse. Anybody else read that story? 941. Hi, who's this?
Hi, Seth. This is Helen. How you doing?
I'm good, Helen. Happy Halloween. We're talking about fears and phobias and relatively obscure horror films that have not been known in the mainstream. What do you have for us?
Well, I have an irrational fear of frogs.
Why? Where does that come from?
It comes from my childhood, and a couple incidents happened when I was a teenager, but I think I was like 5 or 6 years old, and my parents, we used to have an outside pool, and there was a bathroom that was adjacent to the outside pool, and I was about 5 years old, and I was going in to use the bathroom. And I hadn't turned on the light yet, and I felt something pop across my foot. And I kind of freaked out, and I turned on the light, and there was a bunch of frogs that had gone into that small bathroom, I guess because of the tile, and they started hopping all around because I flipped the light on, and it scared the crap out of me. So for a good portion of my life, I've always been afraid of, like, frogs, like, jumping on me and, like, attaching themselves to me and stuff like that. I know it makes no sense, but it's, like, it scares the crap out of me.
I get it. I think when the frog, when you pick up the frog and it pees on you, that's what freaks me out. Yeah. Like, it's not a scare. It's more like just disgust, you know.
And then when I was, like, a teenager, I was driving a friend home after we spent, like, a night together, and there was a storm, and she lived right next to this pond, and all the frogs had, like, come onto the land, and I was driving, and I could hear the frogs popping underneath the bottom of my car, and it freaked me out so bad because I had images of, like, exploding frogs in my head, so it just fed that fear. So yeah, I've been getting better. Like, I can be near them. Like, I don't have to back up like 15 feet anymore, but I still won't touch them or pick them up. So
all right, well, I hope there are no frogs in your future, my friend. So
too.
Can I give you some advice real fast?
Yeah.
If you have
sure,
a frog phobia, don't ever rent the Paul Thomas Anderson movie called Magnolia. Okay? If you see it, if you see it listed, the last half hour of Magnolia will probably send you to the hospital. I'm just warning you in advance. Don't do it, okay?
I got it. Thank you, Seth. I appreciate that.
All right, public service.
I appreciate that. And as far as a good horror movie you may want to check out, have you seen Dead Alive?
Oh, yeah. One of Peter Jackson's early works. That is one of the most disgusting films I have ever seen.
I know. It's one of those movies, like, I don't like body horror at all, but something about that movie, like, the comedy makes the really gross parts palatable, almost in a way.
No, I so totally weird. Get it. It's meant to shock and make you laugh as you're shocked. I am sorry. The lawnmower in the living room scene alone is worth a rental.
Exactly. So, yeah. So, and for a good thriller, I really recommend Annihilation with Natalie Portman for a good thriller movie. And it's new. It's on Amazon. You can watch it. It's a beautiful film, but it's a really good, tense, like, thriller. So,
good stuff. Thanks for calling. Happy Halloween.
All right. Happy Halloween to you.
See you later. I loved Annihilation. It was created by the same guy whose name escapes me, who did Ex Machina. And it's so freaking smart. It's just a layered story that has so much stuff in it. You know, those movies that when the lights come up, you're still thinking about it. And the next day you're still talking about it. And then you go back and watch it again to see what you missed. And then you watch it again to see what you missed. Annihilation with Natalie Portman is a smart, it's not a horror movie. It's a little, it's a sci-fi film, but it's, you know, speaks about evolution and life and the fragility of life. And there's just so much stuff in there. Really, really good. Dead Alive. not for everyone, because it's so damn gory. I have to know now if there is a horror movie about frogs. You know, this is like the Sci-Fi Network. They have a thing where they will take any living creature and they will decide to make a horror film out of it. Was it, I don't think it was, maybe it was Sci-Fi that did the film Mant, part man, part ant. We've got time. I got to look this up. Okay. Frog horror movie. Horror movie that is not Magnolia. Oh my God. 1972. Frogs is an American horror film directed by George McCowan. It tells the story of an upper-class U.S. Southern family victimized by several different animal species, including snakes, birds, and lizards, as well as the occasional butterfly. You should see the poster. It has a frog with a human hand coming out of its mouth. If you are squeamish, stay home. Cold green skin against soft, warm flesh. You'll croak, you'll scream. Frogs, directed by George McCowan. Okay, what else was I talking about? Let's see. I was talking about how sci-fi will make a monster movie out of anything. Let's see. Sci-fi monster movies list. I'll see if something comes up. You can Google. Have you noticed you can Google anything? And you can Google anything and you will get a hit. Okay, here we go. List of various sci-fi films by title. Two-headed shark attack. Three-headed shark attack. Anaconda 3, The Offspring. Avalanche Sharks. Battle Dogs. Blood Monkey. Man Thing. Lavalantula. Ice Spiders. Mansquito. Mega Piranha. Mega Snake. Mega Shark. Mega Shark versus Mecha Shark. Mega Shark versus Colossus. Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus. Monster Wolf. Frankenfish. Ghost Shark. My best friend Corey told me about Ghost Shark. No shit. It's a movie, a horror movie, about a shark that is a spirit shark that can live in any body of water, including an 8-ounce glass of tap water. Okay. Go to YouTube. There's a clip of it. Type in Ghost Shark. There's like a clip of highlights. This shark can live in a puddle on the street. It can live in the bathtub. It can live in the water that's in the gutters of your house. Anywhere there's any body of water, even the tiniest body of water, the ghost shark can get you. So you see people who are running down a wet street, and there's a puddle on the ground, and as they run through the puddle, this ghost shark comes up and literally eats them alive and cuts them in half. Ghost Shark. Sci-fi movie. It's awesome. Ghost Shark. 719, thanks for waiting on me. Who's this?
This is Robin in Colorado.
Robin, thanks for being a part of the show. We're trying to distract ourselves with stories about our fears and phobias. You have something for us today?
Yeah, actually, space. Space and, you know, just outer space in general scares the heck out of me.
The vastness, the coldness, the loneliness of space?
Yeah, and black holes, those are terrifying things to me, just thinking about that. What goes into it, and where does it go, and why does it eat everything?
So, you didn't see Interstellar, or did you?
Yeah, I have seen that one. That one's really good.
Well, there's a black hole in Interstellar.
Right.
Did it have an effect on you?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was creepy.
There's it was the first PG movie that Disney ever made before Disney realized that, you know, branding itself as a family-friendly movie house and doing PG movies at the time was a bad idea. I think they became Touchstone Pictures. But their first PG film was called The Black Hole. And the black hole there was this sort of blue, swirling, beautiful thing. It was nothing like a black hole would actually look like, because black holes swallow all light. But this cinematic black hole, it was right. This sort of spinning, beautiful, blue thing that was sort of hanging out in outer space. When I think of a black hole, I always think of that and that movie. Tell me specifically about space. What bugs you about space? If you could describe it in more detail.
I think the fact that, well, you can't survive it, you know, you can't just walk out, take a stroll in space. It's a vacuum. So I don't even know if sound travels in space, you know, I mean, does it? I don't know enough about space to know that, but
it does not travel in space. So.
Yeah. That to me is creepy. And the idea of extraterrestrials or the possibility of life elsewhere, it's humbling, but at the same time, it's terrifying.
So, did you see Gravity with George Clooney and Sandra Bullock?
I saw that one. That one was pretty scary.
She's drifting, tumbling outward, out of the reach of gravity toward oblivion. That must have freaked you out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
All right. Well, hey, you know what?
Yeah.
You are here. You are constrained to terra firma by the forces of gravity, and you are safe. So that is my encouragement to you. You're not going to fly out into the darkness and loneliness and soundless oblivion of space. You are here with us. Okay?
Right. Right. Exactly.
Awesome.
Well, thanks so much.
That's a great story. Thanks for calling. You have a good holiday, okay?
Thanks. You too.
I was watching a documentary about Stanley Kubrick's 1968 masterpiece, 2001, A Space Odyssey. I think that's another film that really does communicate the coldness and the loneliness of space. I mean, the whole film is a little bit cold, and I think it was produced that way on purpose. And again, who knows the mind of Kubrick, but I think the human characters are muted characters to play against the actually, I think, more deep and human character of Hal, the computer. But the scenes in space, which hold up really well, considering they're 50 years old, they really do communicate the loneliness and the vastness and the void of space. And if you were to be in a tiny spacesuit flying out toward oblivion, imagine, I mean, essentially you would tumble and tumble and tumble until you died of dehydration, I guess, or until you decided that there was no salvation and you figured you'd just end it all by taking your helmet off. And I think you still can survive in space for like 30 seconds. What would you do, right? You're tumbling out toward nothing and you will have no rescue. I don't mean to torture my previous caller with this observation. I'm so sorry, but let's talk about this. If you were flying in space and there was no rescue, there's no shuttlecraft, you're not going to be transported to safety. You are flying out and you know that you will tumble until you die, which is going to be a matter of days. Would you just strip off your helmet and end it in 30 seconds? And would you freeze to death, or would you suffocate to death, or both? Dark yet interesting and probing questions about space. Peace. Getting back to black holes and the Christopher Nolan movie from a few years ago, I wanted to like Interstellar. I was on board with Interstellar until I wasn't. He's in there with the compass and the dust and the daughter, and he's in the bookshelves and the thing. I mean, it was interesting to look at, but I mean, what the hell is that about? What? Anticlimax. I'm just saying. 843. Hi, who's this?
Hey, Seth. It's Heather again.
Hi, Heather. We're talking Halloween. What do you have for us?
So, I can't do horror films at all. And that's because I endured a little too much real life horror. And it's resulted in me being irrationally afraid of almost everything.
Oh, that sounds like a terrifying life. I mean, is it like, are you locked in your house, afraid to step outside kind of stuff, or what?
No, but I do PTSD, and I have something called hypervigilance, which just means I have a really hard time relaxing, and if I hear a noise outside, I gotta check the window, and stuff like that. And part of why I can't do horror films is because I eventually went into foster care and, you know, got some help and stuff. But my stepdad thought it would be funny to come into my room one night and wake me up wearing a Jason mask and a Freddy Krueger claw.
Jesus Christ. How old were you?
I don't remember how old I was then, but I was definitely under 10. And they also showed me the movie Chucky and then got me a buddy doll. And I would bury it in the toy box every night and put all these animals on top of it and everything. And they would pull it back out and move it around to freak me out.
Yeah,
so if I had to wake up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, I would like run past my own toy box.
What kind of perverse horror circus did you grow up in? You got parents like I get the prank thing. I get it, you know, but
just super horrible people
in your 10-year-old's bedroom in the night wearing a mask and a steel claw. That's not okay.
They were just horrible people. Like I said, I eventually went into foster care. And honestly, that horror, like messing with me about horror stuff was like the least of my issues growing up there. And we grew up in this area in the Hudson Valley in New York where we had a lot of snakes and bats and mice and all that sort of thing. So I'm not a fan of those either. And I do have a couple of pretty irrational fears from it. I have a really weird phobia if I stay on the toilet too long. A snake or a frog or something is going to come up and bite my butt.
I think stuff coming out of the toilet's a common fear. A lot of people are like, the hand will come up. There's something underneath you. You know, that's a lot of people have that one. Yeah, they can relate.
I'm pretty much afraid of anything that is unknown or can't see. I don't like being in water either if I can't see clearly what's under the water. And all of that sort of thing. And I also used to have this recurring dream, like you were talking about at the beginning. They had told me that my mom was playing with a Ouija board, and I got locked inside a room, and my grandfather had to get an axe to get me out of it. These were very crazy people that I was around. And they told me this, and so I used to have this recurring dream for years and years and years, that I would just be in the middle of that room and it was emptied out. There was no furniture in it. And this shadow would go from wall to wall, creeping ever closer to me. So I just cannot do horror. I don't get horror movies. My husband loves them, but I can't do it at all. I don't understand it. You know, I get freaked out and jump from the simplest little silly things. So I can't offer you any horror recommendations.
That's right. Hey, but Let me ask you this. What brings you joy?
Yeah.
What makes you happy? Just give me an example of something that just makes you feel good.
I love watching my husband play like ball or something with my son out in the yard. That's pretty much a surefire smile right there.
Okay.
And I love doing my art and things.
Okay. Well, right now I am sending you good vibes. I mean, they're not like spiritual vibes, but I'm sending you the good vibes of children frolicking and playing with the ball. And with happiness and art and color and light and all the good stuff that you may have missed during your childhood. And I'm reminding you that there is much good in the world. And I hope that, you know, you're able to sort of continue to stair step out of these sort of darker times toward better ones. That's my encouragement to you. Okay.
Absolutely. Thanks, Seth. But right. Yeah, for me, there's way too much scary stuff in real life for me to want to invite the horror movies in and add on top of all of that, you know?
I got you. Well, you take care of you, okay?
But that said, I'm still going to give Ghost Stories a try. I haven't done it yet, but for you, I'm going to give it a try. And if I like start getting weirded out, I'm going to just shut it off. But I am going to try it for you, Seth.
Don't traumatize yourself. I'm going to be responsible for you having an episode. All right. I'm just saying. So I'm just terrible about that. Hey, you're appreciated, my friend. Be safe out there. We'll see you later.
Thanks, Seth. Bye.
Natalie sometimes wonders what my attraction to horror movies is. It's difficult for people who don't enjoy it. I mean, it's a subjective thing. You know, do you enjoy carrot cake or do you enjoy chocolate cake? Do you crave adventure? You want to go out hiking and bungee jumping, etc.? Or do you want to sit at home on the couch with a cup of coffee? You know, is that your idea of a good night? Do you like roller coasters or are you afraid of roller coasters? And I see horror movies as a kind of roller coaster because I won't get on a thrill ride. I won't do a roller coaster, any of those things. I'm terrified of them. But I will go see a horror film. For me, the horror movie is a roller coaster. It's a place where you can be afraid and even feel in danger. It really, I mean, you know logically you're not in danger, but your emotions are keyed up. And you are grabbing the arms of the chair, and you are sitting forward, and you're curled up in a ball, and you're holding the hand of your date. You know, you are in that moment. Don't go into that room. Turn on the light. Don't check out the basement. Whatever you do, don't split up or have sex, or you will die in this horror movie. For me, that's a roller coaster, because you have the illusion that you're not safe, while still knowing, really knowing that you are safe. And then the lights come up at the end and everybody smiles and laughs and high fives. And holy shit, wasn't that a ride? I think, you know, sometimes it taps into the dark. We all have a dark side. It taps into that, allows you to play in that playground safely. And then you can step right out of it and get back into the rest of your life. But it's not for everybody. It's a preference, a subjective preference. You know, even people within the horror genre, they like different types of horror films. Maybe you like the gore fest. Maybe you're into ghost. Maybe you like psychological horror. You know, there's so many different varieties and flavors, to each their own. And if it's not your thing, I totally get that. It's not your thing. 951. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Alma. I'm calling from Cancun.
Lovely place. What do you have for us?
Well, I don't know if you already talk about this, but there is also another horror that a lot of people live with. It's like the sleep paralysis, when they start to hallucinate that they have demons or somebody comes in to sleep on top of them. They cannot talk or move or do anything during that state.
I suffer from sleep paralysis. Do you have that problem?
Yeah, I did. And the thing is that once that I knew what was sleep paralysis, I actually started to realize that I had it in the middle of the dream. Like, I will start to have, like, to see, like, this shadow around me and everything, and I will be like, oh, okay, again?
There's a documentary about sleep paralysis. It's really good for the first 30 minutes, and then it sucks because they do nothing with it. But it's called The Nightmare.
Yeah.
And I remember watching the Nightmare documentary and getting chills because it's like they'd crawled in my skull. Sleep paralysis, for those who don't know what it is, you are essentially, your body goes into a paralyzed state while you dream. And what that does is if you are running in your dream or you're acting out in some way, you're not actually flailing about in your bed because the brain has paralyzed the body. It's all happening in your skull. And in sleep paralysis, what happens is you're actually emerging out of the stages of sleep to the point of near consciousness. Sometimes you can even open your eyes and look around the room and see your own bedroom. But the brain has still paralyzed the body as if you were in stage 4 REM sleep. And you panic because you can't move. You feel like you cannot breathe. The more you have that sensation, the more your heart begins to race, your lungs seizes up, and you just flip out, but you can't break out of the cycle. You're actually trying to wake yourself up sometimes. I need to wake up. I've got to wake up. And you cannot do it. Also, a common denominator with sleep paralysis is the feeling that there is a figure looming over you in the bedroom. And this is a commonality. Do you have the looming figure in your sleep paralysis?
Yeah, I did. But at first, it was more like, you know, it's just that I used to be a Jehovah's Witness. So it was more like a demon. So it was more like influenced by that, like the demons that I was being talked about all the time. And then when I knew what sleep paralysis was, the figure just started to fade and I stopped having so much fear.
Oh, wait. So you were able to sort of reason your way to the point where it's not as much of a problem.
Yeah. That was like really interesting to me because I got to a point when I am in the middle of it and I realized, oh, I am having this again. I'm having the sleep paralysis. So I just start to try to calm myself and say, oh, okay, hold on. You have to wake up.
It is a little easier when you're not predisposed to think that it's demons. You know, when you're a believer in the supernatural realm and you think, well, there are always angels and demons everywhere, when you see that looming figure looming over you, you know, and you can't move and can't breathe, you are front-loaded to think, well, this is some kind of spiritual attack or dark supernatural force. If you can let that go, I can see how that would make the experience easier for a lot of people. And that was the case for you, right?
Yeah. And it was interesting because it got me to a point that now I can do that also with my nightmares. If I am having a nightmare, I can realize that I am in a nightmare. I can stop it. So it was really interesting to find out that just knowing something like that, just the fact that I knew what it was, it leads me to that.
Well, I appreciate you. I'm glad you found your way through, and many restful nights for you ahead is my hope, okay?
Okay, thank you.
I didn't know what sleep paralysis was till I finally did some research on it a few years ago. We've actually talked about it on the show. But even though I know what it is, and I know it's not a demon, I'm still in a moment of panic because I'm pretty much half conscious. It's that disorientation feeling when you just wake up and you're like, what time is it? Where am I? What's going on? I mean, your brain is not really functioning in a completely lucid way. And I will admit this, it's not really I don't know what it is, but Natalie will wake me up. She's like, you were yelling again. This happens 2 or 3 times a year. It's freaky. You were yelling. And so she'll rattle me awake, you know. And I said, well, you know, what did I sound like? And she tried to emulate the sound. And she said, you know what? Next time I'm going to grab my phone. I'm going to take video so you can hear. I'm like, hell no, you're not going to take video. Wake my ass up. Don't let me lie there paralyzed and freaking out with a looming figure over me. Do not leave me in that state 1 second longer than I have to be. Do not take video. I'm not that curious. Wake my ass up. In just a second, we're going to talk a little bit about the fearful brain. Why in the world do we freak out? Why did we do the things we do when we get scared? Why does the body seem to rebel against us? And how can we maybe override that when we know that the fear is not a rational fear? We're going to talk a little bit about the science of fear after this.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
You know, I'm interested in fear, the science of fear, the analysis of fear, the effects of fear. In some cases, we have evolved to be afraid of certain things. I wrote about this a little bit in Sacred Cows. I was talking about snakes and reptiles and the fear of snakes and how human beings, our brains have been coded to be reactive to snakes. I mean, how many times has somebody seen a snake and just wigged out? Well, this relates back to our primitive ancestors. They were more prone to encounters with dangerous reptiles, venomous snakes, etc. And this fear of snakes was part of a larger survival mechanism. So for our ancestors, that fear might have kept them alive. Fear of heights might keep somebody from taking the risky walk around a dangerous cliff. The fear of other tribes might have kept somebody from being attacked by those tribes. Now, of course, we have evolved and our civilizations evolved and our circumstances have changed and we've overridden a lot of that stuff as we've evolved and educated ourselves. But the fearful and reactive brain still does what it does. If you feel fear, it's because of the amygdala. It's a part of the brain that's found deep within the temporal lobe. By the way, amygdala comes out of the Latin. It translates to almond in Latin. That's because the most prominent nuclei of the amygdala is actually shaped like an almond. So they call it the amygdala. It's got two parts in one cerebral hemisphere. It's best known for the processing of fear. Okay, the amygdala. Think of it as the brain's alarm system. It's like a 911 operator living inside your skull. So you see something, you hear something, you touch something, you smell something, even taste something. And that 911 operator in your skull says, hey, something's not right. And it starts blasting these signals out to the rest of your body, and the body responds. Your heart rate goes up, the blood pressure goes up, your breathing becomes fast, stress hormones are released into the bloodstream, all of this happening within a fraction of a second. Sometimes you literally freeze. You just freeze in place. You don't move a muscle. And this was part of our survival. In the animal kingdom, freezing in place might have kept you from being seen. The predators out there looking for something moving off in the brush, a moving target, you freeze, you're harder to see. The elevated breathing and the elevated heart rate and the adrenaline shot to the system got you ready to either fight it out to survive or to run, to escape, to get the hell out of Dodge, the fight or flight response. And then we get into anxiety and we think about what might happen. What we dread is going to happen, perhaps based on something that already happened to us in the past. Just the thought of that time when we put on our shoe, and there was a brown recluse spider that was in the shoe, living in the shoe. Or the stranger that followed us when we were walking down the alley, or the time that we were working on the roof, you know, trying to fix a shingle or something, and we slipped and fell. And we injured ourselves from the fall. And so the idea of falling from height, that kind of thing, kicks in the amygdala. And we tense up and our lungs seize up. And then we start breathing heavy. And then the heart races and our palms start to sweat. It's the anticipation of danger, not the danger itself, that produces the response. You know, it's interesting to note that we don't learn very well when the stress hormones have kicked in like that. When stress hormones are high, our cognitive abilities are reduced. We don't learn well when we're scared. Low levels of the stress hormone cortisol actually improve our learning and enhance memory. So when those levels are down, we're doing well, our processors are handling all the information, and we're able to sift through what's happening pretty clearly. But you kick cortisol into high gear, and that effect is reversed. We're not thinking well. We're not learning well. Our memory goes to shit. This is sometimes why we'll do something kind of crazy when we panic, and then afterwards we're embarrassed and self-conscious. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. In the heat of the moment, I freaked out, and I didn't mean to freak out. I'm sorry, everybody. I totally overreacted. You know, I'll try to do better next time. This is a common thing. It's because whenever we panic, sometimes we're just not thinking clearly, and we do something kind of irrational. Now, don't get totally down on the amygdala. There's a lot of evidence that it helps to form positive memories as well. Memories like when you graduated from college, or when you first fell in love, or you drove that new car onto your own driveway. That was such a good day. The amygdala plays a part in that. And for the fearful brain, there's actually a series of things you can do to help reduce or stop what is called the amygdala hijack. You know, those moments when you feel threatened or stressed or afraid and the body overreacts, you realize what's happening with your logical brain. Hey, wait a minute. This stimuli is taking place. My body is doing this. You sort of reason your way through the processes that are happening. And then when the fight or flight response activates, you kind of breathe through it. You recenter. You remind yourself that, hey, my body is engaging in an evolved and automatic response. This is not necessarily rooted in logic. Let's take a second and let's try to figure out what's actually happening. Let's analyze the situation as a rationalist. Let's work through thoughtful and rational solutions. And what biases or predispositions have I brought into this situation? What's triggering me? What's sending me into a panic? And notice the triggers that are present. Focus on the breathing, the speed and the rhythm of the breathing. Focus on the body. Kind of breathe it out. Be in the present. Be in the moment. Mindfulness. The frontal lobes can then better address the situation as it is, and then you can review your options. Fear. It can keep us safe. It can keep us alive. It can even make us feel more alive. But when it becomes an unhealthy thing, we can learn why our fear systems evolved the way they did, and then we can consciously work to override the emotions with this mind over mania process of breathing and focusing and thinking and reasoning. Like anything, this is going to take some practice, but you and I don't have to be slaves to anxiety and fear. And just a side note, I think Amygdala Hijack would be a great name for a sci-fi network movie. Right up there with Man-Thing. I think Amygdala Hijack, that just sounds like a great film. I would sit down for that movie, I'm just saying. 717, hi. Who's this?
Hello, this is Kathy. About the phobia thing really quick. Well, not the, the paralyzed dream. I had a friend who still believes in demons because she saw a demon in her sleep once, and how she described it, I'm like, that's sleep paralysis. And she like still believes in it, even though she's somewhat of like science, and it's just kind of silly to me.
So she had an experience in her dream, but she believes that she was haunted by an actual demon?
Yeah, just because like she woke up in the middle of the night and saw a demon standing in her doorway as a child. And I just kept on telling her, I'm like, that's an actual thing. That's probably wasn't a demon. That's like what you were just talking about with the other person. I'm like, and she wouldn't believe me. And I find it silly that she won't believe me because she's going into science and she's going into medical field.
Well, I think, you know, especially people who are primed by religion, magical thinking, they are tied to these sort of experiential realities, quote unquote, realities. So if I felt it, if I think I saw it, if my mind perceived it, that for me constitutes real. And, no further analysis is necessary. And there's not a whole lot you can do with that. I'm glad you explained the science of sleep paralysis. Perhaps down the way, they'll open that door a little further and get into the science of what it is and what it does.
Yeah, it's always kind of hard for me to like understand people who can believe in religion so blindly. I've always been an atheist, so it's like, it's always kind of weird to me.
Well, there's a thousand different reasons people hold to a religious belief. Everything from being caught at a vulnerable time in their lives, to being an impressionable person, to being programmed and indoctrinated from your youth, cultural reinforcement, guilt, shame. I mean, there are so many different reasons that people buy into it and lean on it and refuse to reject it. And, that's a whole other broadcast. But you're greatly appreciated. Yeah. I hope your Halloween is a wonderful and safe one, my friend.
Yeah, you too.
All right. Take care. We'll see you. I think it's interesting to watch how many people will attach specific meanings to certain types of dreams that they have. They don't do this with all the dreams. But if those dreams incorporate meaningful symbols to them, gods and devils and angels and maybe relatives who'd passed on. You know, look, there's grandma. She's in the rocking chair. She's knitting my favorite scarf. And she said this. Grandma came back and had a message for me. You know, we hear these stories and people say, well, this dream means something. Of course, this is just a commentary on the human desire to find meaning and patterns everywhere we go. Agency is everywhere kind of deal. But we only do that with a certain kind of dream. Like, you don't hear somebody wake up and they're like, you should have seen this dream I had. I had hand puppets on my feet. And I was flying over the Grand Canyon, okay? The Grand Canyon was actually a giant swimming pool and was filled up with movie popcorn, and I was singing while I flew. I was singing Paradise by the Dashboard Light by Meatloaf. And all of a sudden, the puppets on my feet, they started singing along with me, but it sucked up all the oxygen when they did that, and I fell out of the sky, and then I crash-landed onto the top of a Chuck E. Cheese pizza parlor. And I ended up in this huge vat of pizza dough, and then they grabbed me and accidentally cooked me into a pizza, and they put me on a platter, and they brought me to the dining room, and they served me to my mother-in-law. Okay, it's just something, we've all had a dream that is as nonsensical as that. We wake up and think, who slipped the hallucinogenic in my drink before I went to bed? And you don't see people, largely we don't see people going, okay, now I think the hand puppets on my feet mean that I need to learn a foreign language. Travel. I'm walking to another part of the world and then speaking. And then the Grand Canyon with the popcorn speaks to an internal hunger and then being served up as a pizza. That speaks to me being a nurturer. I try to nourish people, you know, nourish them in their lives. I have extracted deeper meaning from the hand puppet Grand Canyon movie popcorn Chuck E. Cheese pizza dough dream experience. You just don't hear that. But if somebody sees a god or hears the voice of a grandfather or child or something else, you know, they wake up and they go, aha, this means something. This has traveled through the dream portal to communicate to me a critical message. I find it interesting to watch how people will sort of select which dreams have literal meaning and which are just sort of products of the blender of the brain. Have I told you the mad airplane story? Recurring dream. This was the only other recurring dream I've ever had. I was five. We lived in this midtown house, a two-story house. I have a twin sister, so we had twin beds. Hers was on one side, mine was on the other. And I had this recurring dream. I call it the mad airplane dream. My five-year-old self, I would wake up, and I would hear this sound of a jet plane. And I would look out of my open bedroom door, and in the hallway, rolling in through my doorway toward my bed, was this model jet airplane made of metal, had a flashing light on the top, and it was moving slowly toward me. And it played a melody. This sort of digital melody is kind of what it sounds like in my brain. Da-na-na-na-na. And it was, because I'm sure I had heard that song, I think it's, was it Nadia's theme? How long does it last? Can love be measured by the hours in a day? What's the name of that song? Love story theme. Thank you for that in the chat. But that was part of the melody, and it just played it over and over again. It's coming through the door, and it's coming right at my bed. And I am freaking out. I'm 5 years old. The mad airplane. And I jump out of my bed and I jump over the plane itself, the little model. And I run down the hall and I go get in bed with mom and dad because I'm afraid. And then as soon as I crawled into bed with mom and dad, I would wake up again in my own bed. And then I would go hop in with mom and dad in their safe bed for real. And this happened over and over again. It became a story that they tell in my family. Have Seth tell the story about the mad airplane dream. We love that story. It sounds stupid now. It's a model airplane. But when you're five and you wake up to the sound of da-na-na-na-na, 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 yeah, it freaked me out. Freaked me out.
You see, Seth, the plane itself has meaning. It's symbolic. It's rolling toward you. It is your inevitable destiny where you walk away from Christianity and then you use a plane and you fly all around the world and you talk about atheism and stuff. And the light on top that's flashing at you the whole time, that represents the white hot light of the flames of hell. But God loves you, which explains the song Love Story. You see, it all has meaning. It all ties together. Everything happens for a reason. There are no coincidences, my friends.
720, hi. Who is this?
Hi, Seth. This is Stephanie in Denver.
Hi, Stephanie. Let's talk. What's on your mind?
So I just first wanted to say I'm from Oklahoma, and you were the first atheist podcaster I ever heard. And so you've always been my favorite.
Oh, thank you.
Anyway, so my weird irrational fear thing, when I was a little kid, I was like 7 or 8 years old, I ran into my bedroom and I flung myself onto my bed, and my mom had been in there doing laundry, hanging up clothes, and there was a pile of coat hangers on the bed. And I turned my head and there was a coat hanger just barely touching the corner of my eyelid, and it terrified me. And I have just been horrified by images of eyeballs, and, you know, and they use that in horror movies. I mean, I can think of so many scenes where they've got somebody's eye propped open and they're about to put something in it. And, oh God, it's just horrifying.
So this was like an old school wire clothes hanger then?
Yeah, straight up just a wire clothes hanger. And it was right there at the corner of my eyeball. And I knew, as a child, I knew like how close I had come to really being hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, we know the power of the wire hanger. Anyone who saw Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween, whenever he was breaking into the closet and she reached up with the hanger and she stuck him in the eye. We know the power of the clothes hanger. So I'm glad you're okay. You could have lost your sight in that eye over that deal.
Thanks, Seth. I've thought about it every day for more than 30 years.
Okay, well, if I was giving you a gift, I would send you a box of plastic hangers, like the dull white plastic clothes hangers that will harm no one.
With little tips on.
Little rubber tips, little bubble wrap on the edges, just nothing but safe hangers for you moving forward. You doing okay these days?
Absolutely. Pretty good. Thank you. And thank you for doing what you do. I really appreciate it.
It is my honor. You take care, all right?
Thanks so much.
See you later. That's all I got. Back to the heavier topics next week, my friends. And we'll get into sort of the nuts and bolts of what this broadcast usually does. But October is the time for scares and fears and frights and phobias and horror movies and all of that type of stuff. And I'm so glad that you shared your stories and perspectives with me. I hope your holiday is wonderful and safe. I'll see you later.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter for a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions. Log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.